Today's program was brought to you by Blueprint, the original juice cleanse program to offer different levels of intensity depending on your needs and current diet. For more information, visit blueprint.com. You're listening to heritageradionetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
Hey, and welcome to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today we're coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You can listen to the show every Thursday at 11 or download the podcast on iTunes. Before we get started today, I just wanted to remind you that May is our membership drive month at Heritage Radio Network. We are a nonprofit, member-supported network that provides over 30 live shows every week. So if you have a chance, please check out heritageradionetwork.org and visit the donate button. You can read more about the site and hopefully donate to keep us coming to you live every week. So today I'm here with my partner in crime and right hand at Design Sponge, Amy Azzurrito.
Hello.
Hello, Amy. We thought we'd switch it up a little bit this week and answer some of the questions that we get over and over and over again at Design Sponge. Sort of an FAQ, but with a little bit of a twist based on sort of what's interesting and what's happening in the industry right now. So we are going to answer the 10 questions that we get asked the most, and then if we have time, some extras thrown in at the end.
Yeah, I'm so excited about this. I am. I love questions.
All right. So number one, I think this is the question we get asked the most, which is how do we find the things that we write about every day?
Right. Well, I can speak to how do we find the homes that we write about. And that's something that I get asked a lot is because I head up that team and people ask me if we only get people just submit these houses to us. And honestly, we have been getting, you know, as the years go on, we get more and more submissions. But in fact, what we do is a lot of outreach. We literally send hundreds of emails every single week. We have a team of people doing that. And what we do is we have, basically, if we see someone whose aesthetic we like, we ask them if we could take a look at their house. And that's what we do. And then there's four people doing that. So you have people who are seeing different things and responding to different things in different parts of the country. We have Anne in Paris, and we have sort of people all over the place.
I don't think people realize that you guys have to sometimes work on houses for like a year.
Right. I think the longest has been 2 years. We've worked on getting a house tour for 2 years. But because we've been doing it so long, we always have something, even if it was a house that we asked about 2 years ago, it sort of is rolling. And that's why sometimes I get possessive of our house images when I see them, like, you know, on Pinterest, and they don't come back to the site, because I just want people to be able to find the other images because they're so great.
That's probably the second most common email I get is, hey, here's this random bedroom picture. Where does it go?
I can find a lot of them, actually. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's how we find the houses.
So that's one, probably the most popular section of the site. For the rest of the site, DIY projects, I would say 3/4 of which are done in-house now by Amy, myself, and Max. And then we usually work with a small team of contributors, whether they're regular readers or people that we reach out to do kind of specialty projects. And this year we've been trying to focus on sort of like recurring themes for a month, whether it's embroidery or crocheting or knitting or things like that, which kind of helps us focus in a little bit. And we try to tie that into whatever our monthly theme is. But for everything else, which is honestly what I think most people are usually asking about, which is in terms of like regular products and submissions, I would say like 80% comes in through submissions, which is really was not the case back in the day. Like the majority of things I used to get, I wasn't super in love with, but I feel like the quality of submissions, at least in terms of people's press releases, has kind of improved over the years. So I would say of the several hundred emails we get in a couple of days, I use maybe 4 of those, maybe a week. It depends on how good they are and how much other original content we have. So, and in terms of how I reach out and look for things, I'm still a big fan of going through exhibitor lists, which is I've been doing since like 2004, which is to try to find art shows, whether they're student shows or shows that are like in the UK or Australia, and just go through the entire exhibitor list. Click on their sites, click on their friends' sites and look through their blog roles. And then the thing I've become obsessed with lately is finding like an Etsy shop that I love and then going through their favorites lists. For example, last week I was looking at Knife in the Water, which is an amazing Korean textile shop. And she's been done for a while. Like, she's taking some time off because I think she had a baby. But her favorites list is like the most wonderful curated list of things. And so then I go through those other people's curated lists. So it's like a wormhole of, stuff. But that's generally how we find things. Question number one, down. All right. Question number two, slightly stickier, but still very commonly asked, which is, how on earth does a blog make money? Or how do you support a blog?
This is the question you get asked at Thanksgiving dinners, I would say.
Yeah, well, every adult wants to know how you have a real job if you work on the internet. I think it depends on the blog. I think it's different. Every blog is run really differently, and I think some blogs look like they make a lot of money, or maybe they do, but it gets split up differently. I can only speak for Design Sponge in that we have a small team of people who work, for the most part, full-time, even if they're not officially full-time. And so I try to pay people as much as humanly possible. I make the same amount as all the other full-time staffers. I try to run it as an egalitarian business as much as I can. And so what we do is typically, it used to be like 99% advertising, which is how most people ran. But then last year, things changed pretty dramatically. And the types of ads that people buy, which I talked a little bit on the last show about that a little bit, it doesn't really exist anymore. People now just want to buy posts, which has been a very difficult field to navigate because it's not something I ever wanted to do and still don't want to do, but kind of have to, because if I don't, I either have the choice of firing my whole team or or not paying anybody, which I just could never do that.
Right.
So I think these days bloggers have to, especially if you're a new blogger, you have to figure out how to balance things. You've got to do several different jobs on the outside. I'm looking into speaking. We're working on another book. We're going to launch some online classes. So it's really kind of about diversifying as much as humanly possible.
Which I think someone told me once that the way you should move through life in your sort of career path is always have kind of three balls in the air, and then if something falls, you're still juggling two. And that kind of saves you. So I think that's what we're trying to do for the site and do personally as well.
It's good. I think it's a good motto to have for almost any business, whether you're a maker or a blogger or you have sort of a part-time job on the side. Is when you keep yourself diversified that way, you tend to constantly be learning, and I think that's one of the most important things that keeps you relevant as a person. All right, question number three. How do you stay motivated? We get that one a lot. And it's not always a very simple answer, but you start this one.
Well, I wasn't, you just ended the last question with the learning. And we did a team, we did a what was it called? The test that we took where we found our
Strengths Finder.
And my biggest strength was a learner. I like to learn. And that really keeps me motivated. So I've been doing a color of the day fact every single day this month. And to do that, I think I started back in March. I started the amount of color books that I have is is kind of insane. Like every day a new book comes and they, oh, and it's like on black, on blue, mauve,
ultramarine. Yeah.
Ultramarine. It's just, and I love it. So that really keeps me motivated. I'm also someone who's motivated by large projects. So I've been begging Grace to do another book, I would say, for over a year. Yeah. I just stay at it. I just love those big projects that you work really hard at and then you wrap it up and they're done. And because we're writing every single day, you can feel, I sometimes feel a little bit like I'm a hamster in a wheel, but when we have these big projects, it's just so satisfying for me to finish them.
I think that's the interesting thing. Amy and I are polar opposites when it comes to motivation. I'm the complete opposite. I'm somebody who likes being a hamster in a wheel, I guess. I don't know. It just seems like less work to me, even though it's probably not. I'm incredibly motivated by feedback, whether it's good or it's bad. I really enjoy comments, whether or not comments on the site or comments on Facebook or Twitter or Pinterest or Instagram or all those different channels. I love that. Even if someone's like, I hate you and I hate your website and it's a stupid name and I hate your stupid new dog. Like,
and I think that's why you always respond to comments is because you love it. You love that exchange.
And I think it's interesting. I think you told me, Amy, there was that article in the New York Times about how, maybe it was you, I can't remember, about blogs being like a haven for people who are introverts. And I'm an extreme introvert. And so for me, it's become my way to like safely interact with the rest of the world.
Right.
So I'm incredibly motivated by just staying connected to people, whether or not they're regular readers of the site or they're just kind of members of the creative community. That's honestly what keeps me moving. And when things are quiet or we have like a weird dead patch where people aren't talking, I tend to get like in a funk.
And that was hard for you on the first book because it was like such a long time before we got to hear feedback. It was, you know, the book had been done a year before we got to get feedback on it.
Ugh. No fun.
I love it. Bring it on.
So the next question is kind of a doozy. So I'm going to keep it a little bit simple, which is what advice would you give to people who are starting a blog? Mm-hmm. Which honestly changes year to year because at this point, the blogging industry seems to like transform overnight on a really regular basis, which is both frustrating and fascinating to watch. I think as of right now, as of May 2013, the biggest advice I can give somebody is something I'm just going to blatantly steal from the Google conference, which was that bloggers should stop thinking of their websites as their home base and start thinking of yourself as a producer of content. And that content does not necessarily live where you live, which is, I'm still struggling with this concept. I accept that it's the way that things are moving, but it's hard because as much as I'm a literal homebody, I'm also like a digital homebody, and I like keeping our content in one place, but it's just not the way that people are consuming content anymore. People want to consume it on mobile phones, they want to get it on social media platforms, they just want to get it in a million different ways. So I think if you're starting out, the biggest thing I would do is to think about diversifying yourself immediately.
That's great.
YouTube, Tumblr, Facebook, Instagram,
it's exhausting.
A blog, a small magazine, newspaper, meetups in person. You kind of have to do it all.
Right.
But I think if you plan ahead, that's probably my biggest advice because people expect you to kind of be a personal brand from the get-go. And so you kind of have to be everything.
Right.
You have anything to add? Or?
That was great.
All right. Thanks,
Amy. Yay. Second it.
One of the most common questions I get, which I love answering because I've become like a weird geek about this type of tech thing, is what tools do you use to keep your business organized?
That's a great one.
I'm a huge unofficial spokesperson for Boomerang, which is a Gmail app I talk about constantly, which if you live your life or in your business on email is incredible because it lets you time when you send and receive things. I love that. I used to use Pomodoro a lot, which is like a little timer that lets you kind of force when you work and stop working. And other than that, we use Google
canned responses
all
that's
the time.
A big one.
And then we also use Google calendars for everything on the team. We have an editorial calendar that we keep that way. And I use Google forms to manage all of the like unofficial payroll basically for freelancers.
We actually use a Google Doc, just an Excel spreadsheet for the editorial calendar. And then we have a shared work calendar. I would say on a daily basis, I have a notebook that is actually here right now. And I keep it with me at all times, and I make lists constantly and refer back to them and check things off. Try to.
Yeah. It's good to have a mix of like analog and digital things happening. And I think I learned this about myself when we did the Strengths Finder, which was that like I was achievement based was my biggest identifier, and I needed to feel like I had gotten something done. And if I didn't, I was really unhappy. And so Amy was like, you need to really start writing things down, even if it's like, file these papers and put them in the bin. Like I need to be able to check that thing off. And I did. I started making lists, and I felt like at the end of the day, I actually was getting more done, even though I was probably getting the same amount done, but it feels
so nice to see it.
Yeah. Which kind of goes into our next question is how many times a day do we check email? When are we not checking email? That's a better question.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, I think we're checking email constantly. And trying to stay on top of things and trying to respond. I mean, I try to clean out. We all try to clean out our inbox fairly regularly. And sometimes we do better than others. But, you know, like everyone else, we have our phones. And we also check comments on our phones and are trying to respond to those on the go.
Which is great. I mean, I remember a time when I started the blog where that wasn't an option, where like you had to manually publish comments from a computer at all times, and that you had to manually do posts live. Like
That's
you couldn't
crazy.
Schedule posts, and now you can schedule like social media updates. All those things change so quickly, which is good. So in some of those tech innovations are good. But
we've actually been doing all of our social media updates live though lately.
We have. Yeah. There is something nice about the immediacy of doing that. And I think there is a convenience factor, but at some points you want to feel like you're a bit more live.
Right.
I don't know. There's something like it just mentally tricks me into thinking that we're more connected than maybe we are. I don't know.
Right.
All right. The next one we'll do right before we take a break is average day in the life of Team Design Sponge. You go first and I'll maybe do mine after the break.
Well, I would say that every day, I was going to talk about this later, but every day I sort of figure out when I'm going to like carve out some time for myself. And that's sort of, I plan my day around that. So I know I'm going to a yoga class, or I've started doing this thing called aerial silks, which is Cirque du Soleil craziness. And so I just figure out what is my like personal me time going to be for that day. And then after that, most days, you know, we meet in the office and I head to the office. We try to get in around 10 and I usually ride my longboard or bike. Lately I've been riding my longboard. And so I get a little like time to listen to music. I think it's important to do that in the morning and kind of like just zone out a little bit. And then we go to the office. And from there, it's just like, I let you speak to what we do at the office.
It's like walking into a storm most days.
It is.
I think.
It's a little bit of a tornado.
What are you going to do to survive it? I would say our average day starts with some sort of very informal team meeting that involves us looking at the editorial calendar for the week. So the posts we're supposed to have done any minute now, and then the posts that are coming up next week. So for example, if we've brainstormed that our theme is going to be about color and we were going to interview somebody who names paints, that we have actually sent the request to do that interview so that we're not suddenly looking at it 3 days later and trying to pull together an interview, which is literally what we did for like the first 9 years of running the blog. Right. So we have some sort of team meeting. We typically are making something now that we're doing DIY projects or ordering some sort of supplies. What else do? We plan a lot of entertaining stuff too, even if that, because entertaining posts take a lot of work to get together because there's always coordinating a bunch of different elements.
Yeah, I would say the morning ends up being a lot of sort of computer time. Like we have the meeting and then it's computer time and that's when we collaborate. So I did a mom style icon post last week and I'm not the best. Max is so much better than I am at designing things and doing graphics. And so I asked him to do that. And that's how we did the color post as well. And that's all of that happens in the morning. And then the afternoons are when we usually schedule our photo shoots and try to shoot. And that's when the office looks like
a bomb on
a bomb.
A glittery. Bomb.
I think you can follow a trail of glitter to the Design Sponge office.
Yeah. So that's how we typically roll. And then we usually end with some sort of like pre-wrap up of how are we going to do this? Mm-hmm. How is tomorrow going to go? Or is everything scheduled? Is everybody okay for the posts that are due tomorrow? We'll coordinate emails, anything else we have to like ask people for. I check in with our other writers. And then we usually call it a day around 6, although most of us end up working at home.
But it's really fun. I mean, I like we always DJ and we have music going for our, you know, we take turns playing music and it's really fun.
Yeah. I try to make it like a clubhouse as much as humanly possible. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll get to the last three questions.
Music for After the Jump is provided by the Screaming Females on heritageradionetwork.org. Blueprint is the original juice cleanse program to offer different levels of intensity depending on your needs and current diet. Designed to purify and detoxify, Blueprint Cleanse is made from the freshest 100% raw and USDA certified organic ingredients, cold pressed to retain nutrients and flavor. Blueprint also offers a line of organic juices, cold pressed and raw, in a variety of fruit and vegetable combinations, and available in individual bottles. Blueprint Cleanse is available at Whole Foods Market and many other retailers across the U.S. To learn more about their line of organic cleanses, juices, and other products, visit them today at blueprint.com or call them at 866-774-6831. That's 866-774-6831. Work hard, play hard, cleanse, repeat.
Hey, and welcome back to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today we're talking about the top 10 questions we get asked at Design Sponge. Mm-hmm. Before we jump back in, I just want to remind everybody that May is the Membership Drive Month here at Heritage Radio Network. We are a nonprofit, member-supported network, and we provide over 30 live shows every week. So if you have a second, please visit us at heritageradionetwork.org. Check out the donate page and see if you can find a membership or an option that works for you. We would really appreciate your support. So before the break, we talked about a ton of stuff. We just ended on what a day in the life of our blogging team is like. And the next question we get asked the most is, how do you fight insecurity? And sort of what are our go-to confidence builders? Which is interesting, because I think if you're somebody who's in a job for long enough, and I'm coming up on a decade of design sponge, which is nuts, what are the ways? And I mean, my confidence level as a blogger and as just a person, it constantly waxes and wanes and depends on what's happening in the industry and how I feel about things on the site. I think for me, I try to every now and then go back and look at the things that we've done, the things that I feel most proud about. And it has never has anything to do with like finances or press or awards or any of that stuff. It tends to be like an email that I got from a reader. Like, I'm really incredibly motivated by individual emails that we get from readers.
And
that,
you always pass that along to everyone on the team.
Because I think it's important, because it's a totally a team effort. And so if I get a nice email, or if Max gets a nice email, or if Amy gets one, I think it's something that everybody should kind of enjoy and take part in. And I save those, and sometimes I go back to them, which seems a little weird. But I think it's important to remember that, like, the goal of the site was never to tell 100 bajillion people something. It was really to make an impact in like a couple people.
To have a community. I think that's one of the things that we really share is like that we wanted to be in a place where you can talk to people and create a community around a shared interest.
Yeah, and know that you really made a difference. And I remember I got a really nice email about the bereavement etiquette post that I wrote and things like that, where you know you've kind of touched someone's life, even in a small way. And even it's obviously not about me, it's just sort of about a conversation that was discussed on the site and then became something else in someone else's life. That's kind of why I do what I do.
Right.
I don't know. What about you, Amy?
You know, I think I mentioned my yoga and my aerial. And for me, it's doing something that's outside of longboarding. It's doing something that's outside of the design sphere so that I'm not so in this bubble. It's that is really important to me, and that really sort of keeps me going and keeps me really grounded and helps with insecurity. I mean, but we all have it.
Yeah.
Right?
That's normal. It would be weird if you didn't ever feel insecure.
I'm not a good person, I think, to be.
I mean, I wouldn't mind having a year where I just felt no insecurity. That would be awesome, but... all right. The next most often question we get asked the most often is not a business question, but is one I probably get asked every day, which is, how do you make a rented apartment more personal, which is kind of our go-to. And we're all, every single one of us at the site is a renter. So we're used to it. I'm going to run through my top ones and then hand it to Amy. First, detachable wallpaper has become a massive, massive thing. And we've run a bunch of examples of it on the site. There are a ton of companies that make it like removable wallpaper that you can use not only in your walls, but you can use like on the fronts of appliances. Last week we ran a before and after where somebody put it on like a David Hicks-esque pattern on a fridge that looked awesome. I love when people make backsplashes that are temporary. Like Anna from Door 16 redid her rental backsplash. She literally just cut a piece of plywood and then wallpapered or tiled over it, I think, and then put that up. Artwork. I mean, every renter has a stupid thing in their closet that says you're not supposed to hang stuff that's over a certain weight, but everybody knows that's crap. So just fill the hole and repaint it when you leave. So hang some artwork. And then area rugs. I don't know what my life would be without an area rug. I feel like that's the best way to bring pattern in when you can't wallpaper like an entire wall. And then I think some sort of photos somewhere. Tell people about your fridge. That's like my favorite.
Oh yeah. It's things that happen when I'm alone with like a bottle of wine, which is I decided that I wanted to sort of in some way just honor everyone who's important to me in my life. And so I printed out all of these photos, which I'd never done before. And we had a peek on the site, which I can't remember now, but we can put in the post, that this showed a refrigerator that was completely covered, 100% collaged with photos. And so I tried to recreate that, and I had all of these photos, and I tried to have at least one photo of everyone who was important to me in my life, so that if they came over to my apartment, they would see themselves on my fridge. And that was my goal. And it made me feel amazing. And it's something like, it, I think it looks great, and I can easily take it down.
Well, it's something that says you live there.
Right.
Not, you know.
And these are my friends.
Yeah. I think things like that are right. Nice touches.
I'm a big fan of painting, even if you're not supposed to.
You can just paint it white.
Just paint it white when you leave. And I've never had
I've done that in
complain.
Every single apartment I've ever been in.
I've been a renter for the last, like, I don't know, as long as I've been an adult. So it's like, and I've never had anyone ever complain if you repaint it white. It makes such a huge difference. It
yeah.
really does.
It really does. It makes you feel like it's your apartment. And I mean, obviously you want to think twice about colors that involve a lot of work to cover up. But
right.
I've done that. I wallpapered a rental.
I painted a red kitchen one time.
Yeah, I had a red bathroom, like a really dark espresso brown
bathroom.
And I would
say even if you're nervous, what you could do is just paint. Oftentimes that white that they use in rental mm-hmm. apartments is like the most disgusting, cheap kind
yeah.
of cigarette smoke looking
yeah.
white. And if you just bought another white that was just crisper
yeah.
and cleaner, it would change the whole look of your
mm-hmm.
place, and it could stay white and no one would complain.
That Farrow and Ball linen color
mm-hmm.
is incredible.
So nice.
If you need a good white, that's a good one. I'm going to skip the last question because I feel like it's a whole other show in itself
okay.
and go on to rapid fire questions because we have a bunch of more fun questions
oh,
that we
yeah,
get asked a lot. And we
rapid
have
fire.
4 minutes, so I'm going to do it. All right. If we won the lottery, what are the home objects we would buy? Amy.
You first.
Something upholstered. I would upholster everything I own in something amazing and awesome and custom because I don't have money to do that. So custom upholstery out the wazoo, and then probably some really amazing like original paintings because that's not in my budget.
Yeah, I think I would spend money on artwork as well because that's something that I think I would just get on first dibs and shop
Ooh.
Like crazy for all of those sort of amazing antiques that I just
That would
over.
Be awesome. To be one of those ladies that's like, what's that chaise? It's 20 grand. Oh, it's 200. Who cares?
I would
just
have a
get it.
We have a library lighter in our office. I would like have one in my house.
That would be awesome.
Anyway.
All right. Next up. What would you do without the internet for a week?
Like, where would I go?
I don't know. You got a week. What would
I
you do?
Go crazy. I don't think I had the internet. I didn't have the internet for a short time in Finland when I was there. And we basically, I love to be outside. I love to be active. I love to do things that are not online. So I think I would spend my week being outside, hiking, cooking, hanging out with friends.
Yeah. No one said we didn't have TV. I just want to clarify
oh,
that. So I would
one.
Have a couple days of couch and movie time. And I'd probably travel because I feel like keeping up with work and the internet while you travel is like so difficult or
right.
just kind of soul sucking because you're like jet lagged and the last thing you want to do is like get into your hotel bed and
right.
catch up on email. So I'd probably sleep a lot and then travel somewhere so I wouldn't
That's
have to worry
one.
About keeping up. All right. TV shows we watch.
Oh my God. What TV shows
don't we
watch? I like Scandal. I've been obsessed with Scandal lately. We watch Game of Thrones. We watch, or
Who doesn't
I do.
Watch Game of Thrones.
Everyone
loves it.
We've been frustrated with Mad Men, I think,
Ugh,
across the board.
Don Draper.
So mad. What else do we watch?
I like rewatching old stuff. I've been rewatching Freaks and Geeks on Netflix, and I'm very excited for Arrested Development on Netflix. I watch like weird Middle America, Everyone Loves Them shows. Like I love Modern Family.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a hug in television form.
It
I don't
is.
Know. That's what Designing Women was for me when I was in college. I missed the South, and so I would watch Designing Women
That's
in my
so
NYU
cute.
Dorm like a total weirdo and just be like, Delta Burke, take me away. All right, let's get there. Where else would you like to live?
Oh, wow. You know, I love Philly. I'm currently just obsessed with Philadelphia. I think it's a great city. It's so close to New York. I have so much fun when I go there. Love it. I love Philly.
I'd like to live in San Francisco. I'd like to live in LA. I'd like to live in Savannah.
I wouldn't mind living in Austin either.
Yeah,
I really
Austin's
like Austin.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That would be good. Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to stay in the U.S. though. I think that's too. Although I really liked Vancouver, but
yeah, I think I would stay in the U.S.
Yeah, I think I'd stay in the U.S. How do we keep pets from destroying furniture? We are two bona fide cat ladies, mm-hmm. so I think we're qualified.
My velvet theory.
Oh yeah, tell your velvet theory.
So I feel like
it's not a theory; it's proven.
Well, it's proven in my house, which is that my cats do not destroy velvet. It's because it's a cut pile, so there's nothing for their claws to sort of grab onto. And so I have a velvet sofa. When I decide not to do that, which I did, I bought like a daybed piece, and I bought it in linen because I wanted it sooner, and it's like being ripped to shreds.
It's like my burlap side chair.
I'm going to recover it in floral velvet as soon as it's destroyed.
Two different products, mm-hmm. sticky paws and soft paws. Mm. Sticky paws is essentially double-sided tape that you can stick on anything, and it should stop them from wanting to scratch it. The downside is you have double-sided tape on your furniture for a while.
Yeah, I hate that. I
opted for soft paws, which are essentially little rubber nail covers that you glue onto your cat's nails, which sounds terrible saying out loud, but I've done it. It does not bother them, doesn't hurt them, and they can still scratch and get the sensation of scratching, but they're not actually destroying your furniture.
I would say also, you and I are pretty relaxed about that kind of stuff, too.
Yeah, I'd rather have my cats than perfect upholstery.
I'd rather have pets than I feel the same way.
All right, last question. If we could go back to school, what would we study?
You answer that first. I have two master's degrees, so I feel like I'm going back to school all the time.
I avoid school like the plague. When I finished college, I was like, I'm done. I'm never going back. I don't know. I didn't really think this one through. I put it on the list and figured we probably wouldn't
like
get to it.
I would do like yoga teacher training or something that's like totally like not in, or I would study Sanskrit, or I would do like something that's
you really
like,
find a job pretty quickly with that one, Esri.
I know, exactly. This is part of win the lottery. Yeah. So I don't think I would go back to a traditional master's program.
I think it's a tie for me between I've always really weirdly wanted to be an esthetician. Like I would love to be able to know how to do like face-based stuff, not makeup, but like give people
skincare.
I weirdly love skincare. It's like my favorite thing. And then maybe now that I have like a semi special needs dog, I feel like I would like to do some sort of veterinary training. So I would like have a better understanding of animals and how to make them feel more comfortable and happier. And I think I know everything about cats, but now that I have a dog that needs a lot of help, I feel like I don't understand how to help her. Yeah, I mean, when I watch her at water therapy with the therapist who like know how to massage her properly, she looks so happy. So something with vet school. But I don't want to operate them. It would just make me so sad.
I
would just like to know it in theory in a book exactly. And move away from it. All right. Well, we've covered a ton. We'll do this again sometime and build up questions. Thank you so much to everybody for listening. We'll be back next week. And again, if you have time to check out heritageradionetwork.org, and this is our membership drive month, please check it out. And that way we can keep bringing you shows every week. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.